Welcome to the Walt Weekly Podcast Friday Live. My name is Walter Latham. I am your host, and I'm joined by Michelle Sweeney McCombs, who is your co-host. And I just want to thank you for joining again. And today, we're going to talk about Ebonics. You know, we haven't heard much about it in recent years. It seems it just dropped off the radar. You know, maybe mainstream media said, oh, that's not even worthy to even cover. We got more exciting things or more bad news to disperse to the people. Okay, but we want to know about Ebonics. You know, we want to bring it back a little front and center and talk about what are the pros and the cons. And if it really is within that context. Okay, so with that said, I'm going to turn it over to Michelle for her to do her introductions of the panel, and then we'll get started with the show. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, Walt, and welcome everyone to the Walt Weekly Friday Live. Everyone, thank you for our sponsors, which is Beauty Blends by Ami, Soap and Love, Michelle Sweeney here. Intro and outro music is provided by Uncle Nephew. Today's panel, we have Ernest J. Robinson out of Washington, D.C., Sergeant, U.S. Marine Corps, Combat Veteran, Senior Consultant at B. Ernest Leadership and Professional Consultant. Our next panel member, who is also the Walt Weekly Engineer, is Gregory Coleman out of North Carolina, COO of Illumination Media and Technology. We appreciate them joining us on a weekly basis. They are definitely bring a lot of gems to the show, and we appreciate you guys for coming and taking the time out. We appreciate our audience. Thank you for joining our Friday Live. Back to you, Walter.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle. How are you doing? You doing all right?
You already start with the Ebonics. Look at this guy. Yes. You can't do it. You gotta be from New York. Yeah. You gotta be
from North Carolina.
Brooklyn.
Absolutely. Well, that's all. I just want to make sure you're doing all right over there. All right. Okay. We're going to be doing this. All right. So anyway, we're still missing two panel members, and they will be joining in hopefully in the next few minutes. Missing Gene, and we're missing Chris Sweeney and Gene Edwards. Okay. So hopefully they will be joining. All right. Let's go. All right. Today's topic, as I indicated earlier, the pros and cons of Ebonics. All right. Is it something we should be talking about? Is it something we should be concerned about? I think we should. That's why I put it on the agenda to be discussed with our distinguished panel. All right. And the first question that I have is, you know, it's been a while, you know, since Ebonics has been, you know, well, subject of conversation and discussion in this country. Every time I hear it, people on the radio, like, you know, you listen to KISS and you listen to WBLS, you know, I mean, they use Ebonics. So our kids are listening to Ebonics. I mean, you know, which is, you got your standard English, then you got your black English. And is that okay? All right. And I want to know, you know, what are the thoughts of the panel on this continued perpetuation of Ebonics, if it is such a thing? Or should it be a language? But I want to hear from the panel on what their opinion and rationalization for their position. Okay? All right. Let's start.
Yeah, so I mean it's funny because I was actually in South Carolina when Ebonics had came out. Matter of fact, the summer of it was some around 96-ish time frame. So I was in New York for the summer, in South Bronx, and then traveled and we had just moved to South Carolina. In South Carolina, for those who may not be familiar, they have the language Geechee, and it's a dialect of French, English, and African cultures during slavery, and there's various pockets that continue to utilize that type of language in order to effectively communicate with one another. And then you have a coin term, a vernacular of Ebonics. And I don't know whether or not if that should be something that should be embraced or recognized, because I think it takes so many different forms. I don't think that there's a distinguishment between one area and another. And you can't use it in the workplace. So should it be acceptable? You know, I'm not 100% sure. I mean, I don't know if it's even fair to even say that someone can't speak a certain way because of everything with free speech. I don't espouse to it. You know, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but it can't be no middle ground here. You can't be on the fence now. You know, you can take a position, yes or no. That's what I'm looking for.
Really. Well, you know, I'm going to intervene because April just posted what I was going to say. What's the difference between bad grammar and Ebonics? You know, like Ernest said, because it's not just the Black culture. White culture has picked it up, too. They have different forms of it. You know, I remember at one time they actually wanted to pass a bill because Tupac came out with a poem book, right? Uh-huh. When he passed away, they had a book. And they actually, you know, some schools in California actually is part of their classroom. And there's Ebonics in there. So they wanted to accommodate, you know, that so-called language of Ebonics in the classroom at the time. And then a lot of people were against it because you're not speaking proper English. You can't go to work, like Ernest said, speaking Ebonics. You know,
okay.
if you're from New Orleans, Louisiana, you know, you have that Geechee slang. You know, everyone knows that whole state is... They speak like that because sometimes I can't even understand them. So, but that's their language of, you know, how they speak. So, there was a time that they were going to make it legal, which people fought for that because I didn't think that would be a good idea.
You know, you don't think it would be a good idea to make it a language?
No. I mean, I can't even understand half of them half of the time. Like, it's not like a normal language. It's not Spanish. It's not French. It's not Italian. It's not, you know...
But don't you think that's subjective, though? I mean, you know, I mean, there's nothing concrete that you can put it on and say, well, you know, mm-hmm. Black English, you know, which Ebonics is synonymous for, and African American vernacular English mm-hmm. is what, you know, is what it is. It's just the way we talk. But don't forget that, you know, back in slavery times, that was the only way that the slaves could communicate around the slave master. Was the result to, you know, black
well,
language.
We're not slaves anymore. Well, we had education.
But we were denied education at that time, weren't we? We couldn't read or write.
Right.
Yeah, Walter, hold on. The thing is, because you don't want to conflate the necessity of being able to communicate with one another. So that's the first thing, because the individuals who were taken from West Africa and taken from the Caribbean and those who are indigenous to North America all had to figure out ways to being able to communicate with one another, not necessarily to communicate with the slave master. They had to have understandings of what the slave master was saying, but we had to be able to communicate with one another, which is how the fusing of right. that language came together. But that becomes a cultural understanding, not designating by the United States a set language for the way that we communicate. So yes, in the household, like you may say up the window or down the window, or you know, there's all kinds of things. Like I used to say, oh man, this bunkie so big, and you know, and that means somebody's butt is big. But
I didn't know what that meant. When you say bonky, that's
bonky. Yeah, that's
wow.
I got you. But see, the thing is, that shouldn't be designated as an acceptable form of communication. The way that you communicate with your family, your friends, that's the way that you communicate. That's like sitting there saying that Pig Latin should be is an official language. For 5 to 10 year olds, you know, that doesn't, you know, it exists, it has a name, but it does not need to have a designation, nor should a designation that is synonymous with bad grammar be associated with African Americans or those of people of color.
All right. Right. And right. Also,
it's true.
That's true. But real quick, in reference to slavery, they spoke that way also in codes so that slave masters wouldn't understand or couldn't figure out what they were talking about. So that was a community language. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I was going to come to that, but I want, Gene, can you hear me?
Greg was about to say something.
I know we got the latency going here.
Yeah, I'm here.
No, go ahead. We
for but Greg, I do want.
I'll jump in later.
Oh, Greg. Hey, now you can jump in right now while we're waiting for Gene.
Yeah, I'm kind of. I have some issues with the term Ebonics from the very beginning. First of all, no one, very few people, I should say, in this country, speak the King's English. Or Queen's English, no matter, you know, which way you want to call it. We all use an Americanized form of English that we use to communicate in the marketplace, in the business place, in schools, in academia, in order to effectively communicate, you know, to people to make sure there's a standard of understanding. Now, I feel we get a bad rap when it comes to what they call black grammar or Ebonics, because there's a negative connotations to anything that we're attached to. So they want to give us the stigma of speaking black English, as they say, when every cultural group has ways they communicate that are not standard, that are unless you're part of that group, you might not understand. We do it the same way. But I think because our culture is so ingrained here, and then it's so romanticized, it gets publicized to the point where ingrained in society now. Everybody, either you wanted to listen to music that black folks listen to, you wanted to dress like black folks do, and you also want to talk like they do. So most folks had a problem with that. If you walked into the house, if a young white kid walked into the house, into his house in middle America, and talked like he heard black folks talk, his parents would be astonished, and they would shut that down immediately. So there's a negative connotation to speaking like black folks. So they also went so far as to let's give it a name. Well, you don't give Italians that speak, communicate with each other that are not speaking the King's English. You don't give that a name. The same thing with the Irish, the same thing with the Indian, Asians, Koreans, Chinese, Japanese. Everybody has a form of communicating that they don't want folks outside of that block to understand. And just like Ernest was saying, we different states. I mean, I can talk, you know, like I'm from Brooklyn, and these folks from North Carolina really don't have a clue what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
And that's purposely. I'm speaking, if I'm Absolutely. Speaking to someone from, you know, from Brooklyn, and I'm speaking so they'll understand me. And as long as it's received like I want it to, then okay. People outside, if I need to explain later, I'll do that. But we all communicate in ways that are as effective to the person on the other end. So I think over the years we've gotten a bad rap when it comes to the Ebonics. Now, do I think it should be a language? There's no need for that. There's no need for that. It doesn't need to be an official language. We speak, we communicate with whoever we're speaking to, so we communicate effectively, whether it's an official language or not. How many official languages are there? So why do we have the burden of having to justify how we speak and communicate with each other when nobody else does? And that's why, to me, you know,
right,
it's a joke.
That's right.
It's a joke.
Because
there's
you have no different, right. You have different nationalities all throughout New York, and each nationality has their own form of language outside.
But
of,
not just New York, this entire
the American
country.
Language. It is, yeah, but it's I'm just speaking from here, but the whole country does. But if you go up to Washington Heights, they have their own language as far as Ebonics are concerned. You know, they all, each nationality has their own Ebonics. So why is it categorized as Black?
Right. And, well, and like, even still, like,
political, you know, implications there with the categorization. Right.
Yeah, right, but they don't.
Before I go further, I'm going to hear from Gene, if possible. Maybe he's having some technical difficulties. Gene?
Yeah.
Yeah, Gene?
Greg is right, because in Spain, the language they speak is called Castilian. And if a Puerto Rican or a Dominican were to go to Spain, they would get lost in the language because it's entirely different. Over there in Spain, they speak like what, I'm not sure it was Greg Ernest that said it, the King's English. Well, they speak the Queen's Spanish. And the language that the people from Puerto Rico and Dominican Republic speak, it's almost like a bastardization of the Castilian Spanish language. And they don't get, you know, penalized for that at all, you know, and that's just a badge of slavery that took place on those respective islands. As far as Ebonics, I don't use it. I mean, if I see one of my boys, you know, or one of my homegirls, I might say, you know, hey, what's up, sis? Hey, what's up, bro? And that's as far as it goes. I have to always practice good diction, mainly because I work in the courtroom, and in the courtroom, they don't play. Like, if the judge were to ask you a question, if you responded, yeah, the judge would say, sir, it's yes or no. Ain't no yay or nah and up in here. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know what I mean? And we ain't talking about pulling up your pants and all that stuff. Like, it goes down in the courtroom. You better be on your best behavior when you're in front of your judge, and you better be well-spoken when you're in front of the judge. So that, I carry that with me at all times. You know, I don't try to switch hats to try to make myself be cooler than, you know, what I already am. You know what I mean? Because like Andre 3000 said, what's cooler than cool? Go ahead, answer that.
Ernest.
What's cooler than being cool?
Ice cold.
Ernest.
There you go. That's all the Ebonics you're going to get out of me today. All right.
Okay, Gene.
But hold on.
That was good.
Hold on. I wanted to say something what Gene had brought up about Spain. So I did spend some time in Madrid, in Seville, and in a couple other different areas. But in the context of what we're talking about right now, everybody knows about Spanglish, right? And everybody is able to speak it. One, because most who use Spanglish don't have a full understanding or don't speak fluently or do not speak fluently in Spanish, and their primary learned language is English, but it's not being codified in it as its own language. It's almost as if Ebonics is a euphemism to talk about ignorance or poor speaking African Americans versus it being just accepted as an understanding form of communication between individuals is being codified as almost as a euphemism to talk, you know, speak negatively on the African American culture. So,
well, then there's another term that they use, African American Vernacular English, which I think is more appropriate, AAVE. And then there are dialects within this vernacular. And I think Greg mentioned that, you know, someone from Brooklyn speaking to someone from, let's say, North Carolina, from Charlotte, there will be a break in communication because of a lack of understanding between the two dialects.
I do want to follow up on one thing, and I might not have made that clear. I don't think I did. I do feel that although when we're speaking to each other and somebody that you know is going to be comfortable communicating with you in a certain way, I do think it's absolutely imperative that you know how to effectively communicate. I'm not going to say the King's English because no one speaks that in the United States, but to be able to effectively use your diction and grammar like you're taught in school in order to effectively communicate again, in the marketplace, in corporate America, and in education. So there's it goes back to there being a time, I feel there's a time and a place for everything. And when you're at work, you better be able to effectively communicate. Just like Gene said, yeah, I can't go in, you know, I can't go, you know, stand before my church talking about, hey, look here, man.
Right.
You know what I mean? Come on. You know what I'm saying?
I like that one.
I'm fitting to be out of here in about 5 minutes. Y'all hurry up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, trip the show.
I can't
deep,
do it.
Deep country, so no. That's about it.
Yeah.
Beachy country, you can, but not, you know.
But no, I'm saying, so I don't want, you know, I don't want, you know, when I think when young folks try to defend, you know, speaking, for lack of a better frame, Ebonics,
yeah,
they feel justified in not learning how to speak, to communicate the right way and you know, right, common terms, and just learning, you know, what they feel comfortable with. And I don't think that's good at all. I don't think that's a good thing at all.
You know what? To piggyback off of what Greg said, you know, that's another issue with the young people, you know, just only speaking Ebonics and not learning how to speak, you know, not learning how to use good diction. We'll be in the courtroom and a judge may want to give the defendant a life lesson. You know, he or she, the judge, is about to give the person a break. But before they, you know, give them a slap on the wrist, they try to talk to them, you know, and engage them and give them life lessons. And whenever the young person that's defendant, you know, has to answer the judge, you can't understand a doggone thing they're saying. It's like, what type of English is coming out of your mouth? Like, what language is coming out your mouth? They can't even speak properly. They can't even, and it's embarrassing, you know. And then what happens is the defense attorney tried to speak for the, you know, for his client, and the judge to say, no, Mr. Latham, I want to hear from your client, and myself and all the other black staff workers in the courtroom. We're like looking at each other and shaking our head like this little son of a, you know what I mean?
Yeah, oh Lord.
Pull his pants down and whip his ass for being so stupid, you know? Because they think skipping school and hanging out on the block is the real deal until they're faced with reality. Until they're faced with the white man's reality, that's when they realize, you know what? Life is not a game.
Yeah, but the thing is that even with that, I don't think that some of these young people today are cognitively utilizing Ebonics. I think to Gene's point, it is just a lack of education, a lack of desire to learn, a desire to be contrarian of societal norms. But I don't think that it's being used, or their lack of diction in a courtroom or any particular setting is intentional to utilizing Ebonics. Now, in a sense, I understand, you know, having to change the way that I communicate, because I oftentimes would spend my summers in New York, in the Bronx, in South Bronx, and then I would go to school anywhere in the South, whether North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, somewhere, right? And there are certain, and so, Walter, when you had brought up about dialects, those dialects are very small and very nuanced, like a draw in a word. Like somebody may hold a word out a little longer. People in Baltimore, the way that they say door or four or something like that, or whatever case it be, it's just the way that they pronounce certain words. But there's an agreement of the English of what we're communicating. So regardless of how you say it, when we say close the front door, the despite how you say it, we understand and we're in agreement. That's what it is.
No, I like the view, you know, that perspective, because that's gonna, you know, dovetail with what I'm gonna talk about now. Is I'm from North Carolina. I think everybody knows that, right? And I left there when I was a teenager, so that's been a while. But when I go home, if I'm speaking the way the standard English, not so much Queen's English or King's English, we speak standard English. All right. That's what the white people did here. We speak standard English, hell with Queen's English, right? But anyway, when I go home, within 1 to 2 hours, I revert back to the way I used to speak as a kid growing up. Okay. And that was heavily Black English. Okay. I'm fixing to go here. Right. You done that? All right. But when I went to school, that was quickly corrected.
Okay. Right, 'cause you know the difference.
So I got you. Right. And I passed that on to my kids. All right. You should be able to speak to the president of the United States or the bum on the street. It's a matter of what environment you find yourself in. Okay. I mean, I got a quick story here. You know, I spent, you know, almost 10 years up and down the West Coast of the continent of Africa, right, doing business. Okay. And I found between Sierra Leone, Guinea, Liberia, Ghana, that there was a common Creole that they spoke, that everybody understood, regardless of the tribes, whether it be Limba, Mandingo, Mende, etc. It was called Creole, all right? It was called Sierra Leone Creole or Liberian Creole, whatever. But I'll give you a few examples of it, all right? I'm a Greek Ernest. I see Ernest on the street. And I would go up to Ernest and say, how they go, bro? How they go? All right, now, did anybody understand what I just said? I'm saying, bro. How are you?
Mm-hmm.
All right? And Ernest may respond to me, I deport that in Grabo.
But that's the language there.
It's a condensed language of English, tribal, all right? And that everybody understood that, so everybody could get on the same page. All right, but the standard language of, let's say, Sierra Leone, Liberia, Ghana is English. You go to school, you're taught English, being a form of British college.
So that's just really street language, basically.
And it's understood by multiple people in multiple countries. I was in Guinea one time, I'm telling you, and I needed water. I'm in the daggone bush, in the jungle, all right? No water, ran out of water. We come to this small village in a clearing, just come to an open clearing up in the mountains. And I wanted water. I said, no, I beg, sir. How you do, sir? How they go? How they go, sir? All right. Water day, meaning it's water there. All right. And he said, yes, sir. And he gave me water. But if I wasn't able to communicate my needs, I could have died. All right, that's why I'm saying that.
Or sign language.
I think what I'm trying to circle back to is that, you know, you could be, you know, speaking the standard English, but be in a position to adapt to your environment, even if it may call for you to change your language, or how you speak. You may go from standard English to Black English.
Yeah,
so you should be able to do that.
That's standard, you know, but it's not something to make illegal.
I didn't say anything about anything being legal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the criticism and the association of Black English with being poor, stupid, ignorant, and it gets a bad rap. It's part of our culture.
Yeah, but the thing is that in what you're saying, it does not necessarily, there's no prompt here for survival by using poor grammar or English.
I'm not saying that, Ernest.
I know you're not saying it, but the discussion here is, you know, is it something that, you know, is needed? Is it something that we should be talking about? We haven't heard about it in a while. You know, what are the pros? What are the cons of it? There's not necessarily a pro when in fact it is not universal. Nor does it even have a survival tactic, you know, or component to it. When people in the Caribbean, they speak patois. In other areas of Haiti or Haiti and New Orleans,
they speak French. Right.
And probably could understand the Creole being spoken between them. But it doesn't have to be nationally codified in order for that communication to exist. And I think that in the context of this conversation, is that Ebonics itself, one, came out of controversy during that particular time in 1996. It is not something that was needed or necessary. And even in the nearly 20 years of its existence, it's not something that we need now. Over 20 years, excuse me, nearly 30 years. It is not something that we need today or to codify in such a way. And most young people, one, they weren't even born or just born in 1996, for those who will be 30 in the year 2026. And this is not even something that's being taught. Go ahead.
Let's forget about the coin Ebonics and just say Black English in certain areas. Black English. All right, that's what it's being called. Okay. Black English.
Fair enough.
All right. Forget about Ebonics. That's just a term.
Okay.
All right. That's a label. All right. So when I mentioned, you know, Creole on the continent, on the western part of Africa, that's used in multiple countries, it was a parallel to try to draw a parallel back to what we speak here, because I sincerely believe that we should speak standard English. If we want to be part of the global community, we have to speak standard English. Okay? All right. But on the other side of the coin, we have to retain our culture. All right. And our culture was Black English, and then we were forced to use Black English. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you work anywhere. I worked in Japan, and when they're in Japan, in Tokyo, they speak Japanese. But when they went into Deutsche Bank or Dresdner Bank, all right, they had to speak English, not Japanese. They had to speak English. Okay? So I understand what you're saying. Don't get me wrong. All right? But when I say Ebonics in terms of pros and cons, but I also said, really? Should be a pros and cons to it? Not necessarily. I mean, should we even be, you know, arguing the point of whether Ebonics will die out in time or it won't? But I consider it part of a Black culture. That's my take on it.
Yeah, but every part of Black culture is not necessarily some of one to be embraced. For instance,
give me an example.
So Black on Black violence has been associated, you know.
But that's every culture. I mean, look at the Italians.
I'm not suggesting that it is mutually exclusive to African Americans. What I'm saying is that it's been associated. The same argument that you're about to say about Black on Black violence is the same argument that we presented about English, about all the other cultures that have different types of way of being able to communicate and speak, but none of them are being codified as some other type of alternative language. It's not being done that way. And so there's no need for us to sit there and embrace a particular thing as a part of, quote unquote, our culture, when one, we're not the ones who designated it to begin with. We're not the one who coined, I mean, granted, I know we're trying to step away from the coining of the term, but we're not the ones who did that. We spoke how we spoke. That's it.
Okay.
And right, there was nothing to sit there and say that. Doesn't say what it was. That's just that's how we talk. And matter of fact, before the existence of Ebonics, that's what you said. That's how we talk where I'm from. You know, y'all don't talk like that. No, we don't talk like that, Slick. This is how we talk. Okay. And then you adapted, or you didn't. And people learned to understand your accent, or you switched it up when you came around that area. And that's how I did when I went to, again, going from the Bronx. It only took me a couple days, you know, and I'm talking like I'm from the block, you know what I'm saying? Because that's how I had to get down, you know what I'm saying? In order for me to fit in, to feel like I'm a part of that particular culture. But when I went back to North Carolina and I'm in class, I had to speak a certain different type of way. And so for a couple of weeks, I sounded different than everybody else.
Okay. I mean, basically, I think a lot of times, Ernest, that when we come at certain times, we come at it from two different angles, but we're basically on the same
page. Yeah, we'll get to the same result at the end of the day.
Exactly. At the end, we come to the same. Yeah. But I do want to hear from Gene. Gene, you've been quiet. What's your take here before we move on?
Pretty neutral. I don't have much to say on that particular topic.
What's that, Gene?
I said I'm pretty neutral. I don't have much to say on that particular topic.
Okay. All right. Good. All right. So how about Greg?
Greg, you're on mute. Just like I, you know, said earlier, I'm not happy about, you know, the label that we get when nobody else gets that label. And so, you know, we have the ability to, you know, to speak and communicate to each other in different ways, just like everybody else does. But we do. It's imperative for us to be able to learn to speak standard English.
I agree wholeheartedly. You know, we have to survive.
No doubt.
And to be part of the global community, you know, we have to. And I remember when I was working at a bank, and the Indians, we outsourced a certain part of our activity to India. All right, so we had Indians coming over and taking over people's jobs. So they had to do a brain dump. You know, the guy had to tell them what I'm doing. This is in technology, IT. So basically a brain dump. But we had to go to class to learn the mannerisms of the Indian folks that came. Why they shake their head side to side, things of that nature. So, you know, we fell over backwards to accommodate them. Okay. So I say that to just say that with Black English or people from the South or people from the North, regardless if you're Black, and you fall over and you're treated because of the way you were raised, you're a product of your environment foremost. Okay. So if you were raised in a household and in a neighborhood that spoke poor, grammatically incorrect English, then you're a product of the environment, so you're going to reflect that. So that's something that needs to be addressed, which also leads me to this question here is, why do radio stations or broadcasts, I can name a few, BLS 107, okay, and you got the DJs or whatever you call the anchors or whatever, speaking Ebonics. That goes right to the kids. Now, I need to know what y'all guys think about that, the perpetuation of grammatically incorrect English.
I think that's simple. They speak to the audience that they want to reach. Whoever that program manager has decided this is what our market is, well, that's who we're going to speak to. And what language do they speak? They're going to speak to them like they're accustomed to hearing and accustomed to speaking. They're not going to go outside that norm and understand. Is it bad grammatically? But, you know, with them, it's about the dollar. We're not going to sit up here and speak standard English. And what are the kids that we're trying to bring in going to do? They're going to turn to somebody else that speaks like they do. This is economics. This has nothing to do with what they could care less about, you know, bad grammar and whether it's, you know, whether it's right or wrong. They care about reaching that target audience.
Okay. So yeah. Go ahead, Ernest.
No, I was going to say that, you know, I agree to a point because majority of those individuals who are radio personalities are educated. And so they use it as a gimmick, not necessarily in their everyday language and or talk, but it does make sense for those who are listening on an everyday basis for you to be able to speak the language of the people that you wish to that are your constituents, so to speak. Like that's an important role. Like you don't want to speak over somebody. You don't want to speak down to anyone. You want to speak to them. And so the best way to being able to do that is to understand, you know, what environment that you are actually in. So I don't see nothing wrong with someone, a radio station, using it as a gimmick, but only as that. They're not endorsing it. They're not teaching it. And most come with the sense that we have a better understanding of the English language. But it's also not their it's not their job every single day to teach English. It's their job to be entertaining or bring the news in some shape, form, or fashion. So I think that the nuances of holding the responsibility to radio stations or personalities, you know, is a little tough.
But yeah, Ernest, what I'm thinking
Ernest was dead on
the
with
point that I'm coming. Yeah, go ahead.
I said Ernest was spot on with that. It's you know, marketing. I know, and I'm not sure what it's like down in D.C. or North Carolina, but up here in New York City, they even have pre-Pride celebrations. They don't even wait for June 1st anymore. They get started in late May with all this Pride celebration. And so every commercial you see on TV is always something involving the LGBT community. Not sure whether it was Coke or Pepsi, but they ran a commercial where a brother was just grooving on TV, right?
Okay.
And the voiceover, it says, like I said, I forgot whether it was Coke or Pepsi. It said, June is Black Music Month. Let's give tribute to all the black musicians, you know, from past, present, and the future. And their brother was just grooving. And when the commercial went off, I was like, damn, I should go get me a Pepsi or something. Whatever it was, because I was like, damn, finally somebody's going to say, oh, it's Black Music Month, not just everything being, you know, Gay Pride Month. So right. That was specifically targeted, you know, towards, I want to say black men, because it was a brother that was up there dancing, you know, and, you know, sisters would dig it too, you know, and for me, what's worse than hearing Ebonics, I hate it when I hear black people use words and phrases that do not exist. Like when I hear people say irregardless, that's an imaginary word. There's no such word as irregardless. Or when I hear black people say, I could care less. What are you trying to say there? You can care a little bit less than what you do now? No, the phrase is, I could not care less. Or like the Force MDs back in the days, right. I couldn't care less. You know, so that really gets my goat when I hear words and phrases used improperly, more so than when I hear Ebonics. Making and with that, words. I digress. Yeah.
No, great. No. I love it.
Well, I want to pick it back off.
Yeah, I tried to set some fire here, you know, and I think I lit a match, and I think it's burning a little bit. We're getting there.
I want to pick it back on what Gene was saying, because I think that the fact of, again, the term Ebonics is embracing something that is widely considered to be improper. So versus correcting the language, we are encouraging that language. And I think that that's where the draw begins at. It's not the fact that you can't say something that's improper. It's the fact of embracing the fact that you're not speaking proper. So and there is a fine line between those who understand the difference between the two. So it's like teaching somebody how to steal candy, or the fact of the matter, like you never taught to lie, right? Like mm-hmm. it was not something that you were taught as a child. Like no one's grandmother or mother said it is a good thing for you to lie. This is how you lie the best. Now, granted, many of us may have said something that may not be 100% true, whether it's today, yesterday, last week, or whatever the case may be, but we were taught better, right? And right. If you catch somebody in a lie, we'll correct that as something that is considered to be improper. We do not sit there and embrace it in any shape, form, or fashion just because it happens to be something that a lot of people do, regardless of the demographic.
Okay. Well, I can tell you, I mean, from my experience, is that you know, when I go home, I go to like North Carolina, and I'm around the boys or the men that are now grown up. They're men now. And when the people that never left, they still speak the same way we did when we were little boys. I found great pleasure in being able to revert back to just talking. It was one of those things about being back home and brought back a lot of things for me. And to be able to still have that in me, that it can come out and I could be understood, because if I speak standard English to some of the people down there that I grew up with, they wouldn't understand me. So, but I take great pleasure, and I look at it as just part of the culture that I came up in. But I know that on the other hand, you know, you can't make a living speaking that way. Okay, that's why a lot of them didn't move. They still stay there where they could still speak the way they did when they were growing up. But those are But they were taught better in school. They know what the correct standard English. When they're in a certain environment and they work at work, they speak the standard English. But I took great pleasure in just being able to just speak the way I did, regardless of the structure or the grammatical implications. But to me, it was like coming home. That's about y'all guys. Yeah,
that's nostalgia. And that's okay. It's perfectly fine for us to have a sense of home, a connection to a culture, right? That when you grew up in it, or it's a part of your family, or whatever have you. That's okay. It does not need to be, anything further defined by the United States to being able to talk about those particular that particular language and or culture, because one, it is something that is not universal. Again, the example that you gave by being in on the coast of Africa and everyone speaking certain dialects of Creole that was universally understood makes sense. Patois in Jamaica and other Caribbean islands makes sense. Geechee and or Gullah in South Carolina, in the Low Countries from Hilton Head down the Savannah coast. Savannah, Georgia, on the Georgia coast, makes sense. But all of those, to where you remove the term Ebonics and just talking about Black languages, that's what that is. But it's not something that can be categorized under one particular thing. It's just like over the past several years, a lot of Black people have gotten on, different social medias and television and everything else to talk about how Black people are not a monolith, right? And our language and our cultures isn't such either. And the other thing that's also a distinguishment between what Black culture or Black languages are today is one, and Gene brought this up either last week or a couple of weeks ago, about the fact that in the United States, we do not have a father. We do not have a language, a king that we here are tied directly to. We are a conglomerate, a cohort of people and languages and cultures that have been fused together. And we have each individually have been able to partake in many or some of those particular cultures, and therefore we directly identify with that. But to have Oakland School District in 1996 try to codify Ebonics or Black languages and attribute it to Black culture is something that we do not need, nor should we espouse to. And I think that we should embrace our culture for whatever it is, however we define it, and however we're able to effectively communicate with one another.
Well said. I like that. All right, Greg, I haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah, I thought I was talking too much.
You on mute? Yeah, you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Ernest, and I definitely, you know, agree with what Gene said earlier. I don't need anyone to make. There doesn't have to be it. You know, it doesn't need to be justified. You don't need to make it a language. Look, we communicate. We communicate. And we also know the difference in how we communicate. Like I said, there's a time and a place for everything. I don't sit down. I know how to go to a restaurant. I know how to choose the right fork if I'm in that restaurant. I know how, you know, to go through different courses, but I also know how I'm not going to grab that knife and fork to eat some spare ribs. You know, I'm not going to use that knife and fork to eat. Now I'm getting, you know, real stereotypical. I'm not going to use it to eat watermelon. You know, there's a time and a place for everything. And we all know the time and the place. And I take that back. Let me not say that. You know, we don't all know, but we should all know the time and the place, you know. So you got to be multifaceted. You got to be multilingual. You got to be able to communicate in more than one way. And this is just, to me, another, you know, negative connotation that they want to throw on the way we do things as opposed to other folks.
And that's my point.
You know, I honestly, like you said at the very beginning, I almost, you know, I hadn't heard about this debate in a long time because I ignored it then. And I'm definitely, you know, it's let them argue about it because it's not an argument to me.
Right. Okay. Great, great, great discussion, guys. You know, I did this, I covered this topic. I wanted to cover this topic because, as you said, Greg, it's been out of the mainstream media. Nobody's talking about it. And I was doing a research. I think I did get something in 2020, but after that, prior to that, rather, it was like in the 90s, since anybody was talking about Black English. So, but I do want to switch gears on y'all guys here now. All right, because I think I got a gist, or I think I got a consensus, or
I just need 30 seconds. I think Ernest mentioned Jamaican patois twice. I have a lot of Jamaican friends, and I always laugh at them and call them uppity because they refuse to use patois. They speak the King's English, and the only way you could tell they're Jamaican is because you can hear a hint of an accent, but they don't use patois. And when I asked all of them why individually, they say it's a poor man's language. Now, the history of patois in Jamaica, when the British came over there and colonized the island, they used the poor white men from the countryside of England to be the overseers over there on the different plantations in Jamaica. So patois comes from England. It comes from the old poor white men from the countryside of England. So when the enslaved heard them speak English, they heard them speak patois, not Massa, who was the distinguished gentleman from London that lived in the big house. No, they heard it from the poor white men from the countryside of England. And that's why my Jamaican friends refuse to use patois, because its origins are based upon poverty. And I will digress with that.
No, that was good. That was great. Thank you. Thank you. I didn't know that. Thank you very much. All right. Okay, guys, I'm going to switch gears here. I think if we were to vote on this, it would be everybody's in favor of standard English and to hopefully minimize or eliminate grammatical English incorrect English where possible, as soon as possible with our young people. All right. Because as I said, they will be part of the global community and they need to make a living. They need to, you know, a lot of things we need to do. I can go through a list and I don't have time to do that now. But I want to switch gears to the New York City elections. For those that are not in New York that are on, maybe you can find this interesting. You know, we got the elections that early voting will start. It had started, right? With final on the 22nd. Am I right, Gene?
The early voting starts tomorrow, Saturday, June 12th, is early voting. And it goes for 9 days. And then the primary is on the 22nd.
Okay. All right. Now, the New York City election. Now, when I started this, show, one of the mission statements was that we would be apolitical. Apolitical meaning we won't take. We're neither Republican or Democrat. But everything we touch that impacts the Black community negatively or positively, it has a political slant to it. So I'm thinking about removing that, you know, for what it's worth, just removing the apolitical. But if it impacts the Black community or the brown community, we cover it, okay? All right, so going back to the New York City elections, does anyone have a favorite for mayor? I mean, I think only but a couple of us won't be able to vote in the New York City elections. Mm-hmm. All right, and I see some front runners.
Well, you know, this year we got ranked choice voting, so you could rank up to five candidates.
Right.
You know, so, you know, my five, I'm going Ray McGuire, Eric Adams, Catherine Garcia, Scott Stringer, and then Yang Lass. That would be my fifth. Mm-hmm. As far as the candidates, you know, I want to say, you know, God is good. You know, I've been a recurring panelist for about a year now. You know, I think I jumped on when I first found out that I won last summer. And, you know, thankfully, you know, through the hard work and diligence and prayer, I built a pretty good resume and profile for myself. So I have three mayoral candidates coming in this weekend. I have Maya Wiley coming in on Saturday. I have Ray McGuire coming in on Sunday. And I have Eric Adams coming in on Monday. And I had a candidate forum with four judges running for civil court judge in the Bronx. And I had three city council candidates and a Bronx borough president candidate all come through. So the fact that, you know, these different candidates know you got to come to the South Bronx, particularly my district, if you want to get some votes out of the Bronx, I mean, I'm thankful for it because it didn't have to work out this way. Number one, when you run for office, there's no guarantee you're going to win. And even if you win, it doesn't mean people are going to have to gravitate to you or buy into your program. So the fact that people are buying into my program that I got going on in the South Bronx, I'm just so thankful to the Most High for it. And we are pushing, we're pushing, and we're getting it done. And we're challenging all candidates. We're not just giving you our vote because you're Black. We're going to challenge you. And with that, I'll back.
No, that was great, Gene. That was great. All right, Michelle's a New York City resident. Can you divulge? Have you made a decision?
Yeah, Eric Adams is on the top of my list. You know, I like the fact that you can have five people on there, but Yang is not one of them. So,
well, what do you think about Maya Wiley? She's coming. She came up. She's coming out of nowhere, though. Right? All right, she's in second place, if I'm not mistaken. In some polls, she came in second.
Is that the civil rights lawyer?
Yeah.
I don't know much about her, you know, until this election. So,
okay,
you know, I'm still researching, but I know Eric Adams is at the top of my list.
Well, we're gonna have to revisit that on another show because, like I said, she'll be here with me tomorrow afternoon. We have a basketball tournament going on in the nicer houses.
Okay.
Yeah, she's gonna be there, so I'll get a chance to chat her up. You know, if you
want.
Is
she from the Bronx?
I don't know where she's from. I haven't heard good things about her. That's why I want to chat her up myself. You know,
right.
And
I know nothing of her.
If you really want a big flex, I'll call you and put you on the phone with her.
Oh, okay, that sounds good.
All right.
No guarantees. Sounds good.
I'm going to try to flex. All right, sis.
Yes. Sounds good. Yeah, I like Garcia too. So
you like Garcia? I know your brother does it.
I'm, you know, because what she did with the sanitation. But I mean, all the politicians that are, you know, the political parties that are running, you know, the only one that I know 100% about is Eric Adams. You know, all of these people are coming from the left, so. I have no idea, but I do not like Yang because, you know, Eric Adams, when COVID came in, he was out there in the heart of, you know, the beginning of COVID because they were price gouging. He was in the streets. He was, you know, helping people. He was giving out food, you know, to homeless people. He was just out there. Yang, as soon as COVID hit, he took his ass to Atlanta. He just jumped bail. You know, just like a lot of other rich people, you know, they got out of New York when COVID hit. So, you know, Eric Adams, you know, he stayed. He stayed in the battle. You know, he took on the war and he went through it, through the whole entire COVID, and he's still there. You know, he's done a lot for Brooklyn.
Hold on. So I'm not a voter, so I don't got a dog in the fight. I'm not a voter in New York. Let me clarify that. I'm not a voter in New York. I don't have a dog in the fight when it comes to that. But Yang went to Atlanta to help Atlanta tip the vote. Now, again, I'm not saying for you to endorse him or to support, you know, whatever case may be. But his chief primary reason when he left to go to Atlanta was so that way he can become a resident for that temporary time frame and be able to vote in the special election. And least,
yeah,
and
that's granted, the excuse he gives. That's the excuse.
I mean, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying it was right, wrong, or indifferent. Not saying that he was truthful in that sense. But Atlanta, I mean, first of all, Georgia was a hot spot also. So I mean, it didn't necessarily seem like it would have been advantageous to leave.
Yeah, but they were more open than New York was. New York was really like we were down. Yeah. I mean, completely shut down. Atlanta was still out there doing anything.
Yeah, I got you. But yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there that you know, he was the at least the very public, unless you know something else different.
Right. He also said that he was helping, you know, with the campaign to get Biden.
Which he was. A lot of people were, but
they didn't move out of the damn state to go do it. Like, he completely left New York for months.
Yeah, but that's the reason. Again, the rationale was he needed to establish residency so that way he could vote in that special election. And that was one of the things he had said. He wanted to put his money where his mouth was. So he moved, got a place in enough time to be able, under Georgia law, to establish residency and being. And now, again, I'm not saying that because he did that, that was great that he did that. And whatever effort helped the election, you know, saying for the state of Georgia, I'm not saying that that's going to be the benefit to the city of New York. So I'm not suggesting that, but I'm just saying that, you know, that's what the reason was. And that's the reason why for the extent of time that he was there. And then I'll also probably say this too. He probably stayed a little bit longer, probably seeking to see whether or not he might get a cabinet position because of the amount of money that he did put in. He was a presidential candidate. And many candidates that were there oftentimes got other different types of positions that were offered to them for their contributions to the victory.
So being that he didn't get offered one, he came back to New York to run for mayor.
2 + 2 still equals 4.
I still don't like his ass.
Yeah.
Amongst other things, because I noticed, you know, when they do interview him, he kind of shies away from certain questions as well. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, you can see a little tension on his face, you know.
Yeah, he doesn't like to be asked certain things. So,
yeah.
You know, Eric Adams is coming hard. You know, I'm from Brooklyn originally, so I've been around him. I've been to events around him. You know, he honored my grandmother for her 100th birthday 3 years ago. He was always a cool person. He's a people person. He's a community person. So, you know, he is who I know. So
I understand.
Yeah.
But, you know, we always talk about, you know, down ballot. I mean, you know, both you have to focus on those other than mayor. We spoke about mayor, but we didn't speak about DA. We didn't speak about city council, borough president. By the way, Gene, how is Vanessa Gibson coming along? In any polls? Have you seen any late polls showing her where she is in the polls?
The last straw polling that I saw, she was comfortably in first place, but we can't let our foot off the gas because she has a strong challenger in Fernando Cabrera. Also, Andrew Yang endorsed Vanessa, and Vanessa, in turn, endorsed Andrew Yang for mayor.
Oh, man.
So that's the latest and the greatest with her.
Yeah, that may be a negative there. But then again, you know, what are you going to do? But we had Vanessa Gibson.
It was a business decision.
Yeah, it's strictly business, nothing personal.
Because you got to realize that her and Ray, or her and Eric Adams, they would be drawn, or even her and Maya Wiley, they would be drawn from the same pool of voters, you know.
Right.
So you know, so Andrew's going to use her blackness, and she's going to use his diversity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a business decision.
Right, I see. Right. Makes sense. Okay. All right. So, with that said, I do want to speak about the DA. I mean, y'all guys, the New Yorkers I'm speaking with here. What about DA? Who y'all guys are supporting?
Well, we don't have a horse in that fight because we don't live in that county.
Okay. Yeah, that's I forgot about that. I'm not eligible to vote in New York City, even though I live in New York. I'm not eligible to vote in New York City.
The district attorney goes by county. So, I just hope they pick somebody that's going to be fair, but I haven't even paid attention to that race at all because it's of no moment to me living in the Bronx,
Right.
I work for the Bronx DA. So one would think that I care, but
I understand.
Couldn't care less.
I understand. Right. Okay. All right. So anyway, I mean, we got some skin in the game with Vanessa for borough president. All right. So we wish her the best. And hopefully if she gets a chance, she could be back on the show. What about Senator Bailey? Have you heard anything from him lately?
Yeah, I've seen him. I don't think
he's not.
Has he endorsed anybody?
Yeah, he's back at Eric Adams. So he's going to be here Monday with me as well. He's back at Eric Adams. Matter of fact, the whole Bronx Democratic Party is back in Eric Adams. I don't know. For some reason, I just can't wrap my arms around Eric, man. I don't know why. But I heard everything you said, Michelle. You're right. He was in there, at ground zero, of the pandemic. But
nobody's perfect.
It's not even his past history. It's just, how black folks are. We kind of like go off of energy and vibes. People say, I don't like that dude. Why not? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just something about him, man. Something about his face. I don't know. I don't like that dude. That's my Ebonics. Second time I'm using Ebonics.
We didn't catch you there. Hey, Ernest, you didn't catch
him? Eric Adams, man.
That's how I feel about Yang. Yeah, that's how I feel about Yang. It's like something about him I don't like. So.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, but anyway, I we're pushing up against that time again, folks. I want to thank everybody that joined us and the people that continue to support us. I do want to make an announcement that we hit 100 episodes. We surpassed 100 episodes. Our 101st episode, this is the 102nd. We also do one-on-ones, which we release directly to the podcast platforms. We complete it. It's in the can. And I tell y'all guys, I think, y'all guys are going to really, really like it. I may put a little bit of promo on it right now. We did an interview with Walter Latham, the CEO of the Kings and Queens of Comedy, creator, executive producer. He put it together, all right? He's the one that worked with Spike Lee. They released it. They made history as the biggest comedy release in the history of the United States, of the world, actually. And Michelle and I, we interviewed that. That's in the can. That will be released in a couple of weeks. So I do want to announce that. Next week, we will be celebrating. And I think I'm getting into Michelle's territory here. Michelle, I'm going to turn it over to you right now. Let me just stop. But I wanted to get that out, right?
You are excited.
Yeah.
That's all right. So it's not a celebration because, Juneteenth was when we emancipated. So Juneteenth represents Black American slaves being freed. So next week, Friday, our show will focus on that and our weekly panel will be on. We will have a poet to come on the first 5 minutes just as give a poem in honor of Juneteenth. So we thank our live audience for joining us this week. We hope to see you next week. Please follow The Walt Weekly. Thank you to our weekly panel, Ernest, Greg, and Gene. We love you guys. Thank you for joining us.
Michelle.
Yes, sir.
Just to give Walter confirmation, let me tell you something, brother. If Vanessa Gibson wins, God willing, she becomes the next borough president, she going to be on this show. She's going to be on this show so she could talk her talk, all right?
There you go.
First black person and first woman to be borough president. Oh, she gonna get on here and talk.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's been with us twice. So, yeah, you know, in victory, and we pray for that. That she's victorious. Yes, absolutely.
She got it. She got it, Gene. We're looking forward to that one. We know she's going to win. She got a lot of people that love her. She's done a lot to in the community. So thank you for that, Gene. Thank you to our sponsors, Beauty Blends by Ami, Soap and Love, and Michelle Sweeney here. Thanks again to our weekly panel, Gene, Ernest, and Gregory. You can follow us at thewaltweekly.com, IG and Facebook, The Walt Weekly, Twitter, Walt Weekly, Podbean, The Walt Weekly, iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and other streaming platforms. Have an awesome weekend. Everyone be safe. Enjoy the weather. Peace out.
Peace. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.